Auditory Perception, Unit 7, How We Locate Sounds, The Head, The Pinna, and an Amazing Computer. The human ear-brain mechanism is extremely effective in localizing the source of a sound. The processes employed are very complex and, even today, only partially understood. This unit will explore this amazing mechanism. First, we will briefly consider some of the better understood cues the ear uses in sensing the sounds of our environment. The most dependable cues are those obtained by comparing sounds reaching the two ears. Directional information is contained in a comparison of the relative levels of sound falling on the two ears. To demonstrate this, we will use bands of random noise 1/3 octave wide. We use noise instead of tones in order to minimize room effects due to standing waves. The following sound comes only from the left loudspeaker. The right loudspeaker is silent. The sound striking your left ear is slightly louder than that falling on your right ear, because it is a little closer to the loudspeaker. You may scarcely be able to notice the difference, but there is enough difference in level for your ear to detect it. Thus, you sense the sound coming from the left. Now, turn your body to the right so that your left ear points directly toward the left loudspeaker. The sound reaching your right ear must travel considerably farther now because your head is a solid barrier to the sound, if you will pardon the expression. Note the louder sound in your left ear. Now a complicating factor enters at this point. How your solid head affects the sound in the far ear depends on the frequency of the sound. With a noise band centered on 8,000 Hz, your head is large compared to the wavelength of the sound, and your head will cast a deep shadow of sound at your right ear. At low frequencies, the sound bends around your head by diffraction, and there is very little shadow effect. For example, a band of noise centered on 500 Hz has a wavelength about 4 times the diameter of your head. Thus, the sound will be almost as loud at your right ear as the closer left ear, because of the diffraction of sound around your head. In this next experiment, wideband white noise will be used. Remain in the same position and listen carefully to the voice so that spectral changes can be evaluated later. This little experiment will demonstrate that your head casts more of a shadow for high frequency than for low frequency sound. Now, please move closer to the left loudspeaker, say about 2 feet from it. This will minimize the effect of room reflections. Once more, aim your left ear at the left loudspeaker as we listen again to wideband noise. Your left ear receives the noise signal with balanced lows and highs, but the sound at your right ear is quite deficient in highs. Now, maintaining the same position, plug your left ear with your finger as you listen to the same wideband noise with your right ear alone. Did you notice a dominance of the bass frequencies and lack of highs in the noise when heard by your right ear alone? It is relatively easy to hear spectrum changes in wideband noise, but the same changes can be heard in orchestral music as well. While you are still close to the left loudspeaker, listen to the music both with your finger in your left ear and without it. Experiment a bit as the music continues. With your finger in your ear, the music still had plenty of bass, but the treble was thin and emaciated because of the shadow cast by your head. This emphasizes the fact that the spectrum of sound falling on each of our two ears may differ greatly. It is these frequency-dependent loudness differences which provide our ears with cues to the location of the source of sound. Another cue used by the ear to localize sound sources is based on the time of arrival of sound at the two ears. If a sound source is directly in front, directly behind, or directly above our heads, both ears receive identical information in terms of level and time relationships. The result is ambiguity and uncertainty in deciding the direction from which the sound is coming. Moving the head will usually provide changing cues which can resolve this uncertainty. If a sound arrives at one ear later than the other, we say that there is a phase difference between the two signals. Impulses sent to the brain through the auditory nerve are sorted out and analyzed, and these phase shifts are interpreted in terms of direction to the sound source. Many researchers have questioned the sensitivity of our auditory system to phase changes. For these time-directional cues to work, however, the ear must have the ability to sense phase changes. The big question is, does the ear really discern phase changes? Let's look into this. In the previous unit, we discussed beats and their relationship to consonants and dissonance of sounds. Those beats are strictly a physical phenomenon, occurring outside our bodies as the two tones pull in and out of phase. Such external physical beats may be perceived by one ear. There are also so-called binaural beats, which are strictly subjective or psychophysical. These give evidence that our ears do indeed perceive phase differences. There will be a brief pause now while you put on your headphones in order to hear some binaural beats. These exist only in your head. They cannot be read by meters, shown on an oscilloscope, or even in drawings. You can only hear them in your head. With your headphones now in place and the loudspeakers turned off, a tone of 500 Hz will now be played only in your left earphone. Another tone close to 500 Hz will now be introduced in your right earphone. Now, both tones will be sent to their respective ears at the same time. The subjective beats sound quite different from physical beats, and are considered to be evidence that directional phase differences are heard in our heads. They are resolved at the level of neuron discharges in the auditory nerve. Two ears are required for these comparisons of levels or time of arrival of sounds. It is still possible, however, to locate the source of sounds with a single ear, or, as the psychoacoustician would say, monaurally. Keep your headphones on, and we will determine what sort of cues the single ear uses to provide spatial sensations. We'll use an octave band of noise centered on 8,000 hertz. This band of noise extends from about 5,600 to 11,300 hertz. It is at these high frequencies that such cues are produced. This octave band of random noise centered on 8,000 hertz sounds like this. This noise will be sent to your left earphone only. There will be no signal in the right earphone. We suggest that you shut your eyes and see if you can sense anything about the location of the source of this noise. We'll call this Test A. Now, in Test B, a change will be made in the sound. Try to tell where the noise is coming from. In the following, Test C, another change will be made. Note the effect on the direction from which the noise seems to come. Does it seem that the sound comes from above in Test A? Does the sound seem to come directly from the side in Test B? Does the sound seem to come from below in Test C? These are the sensations that most people experience. Now, how was the direction that the sound seemed to come from changed? Understanding this helps us to understand what sort of cues a single ear uses and how such cues are generated. All that was done in tests A, B, and C was to take a notch out of the noise spectrum. We simply changed the center frequency of this notch. For example, in test A, the notch was positioned at 8,000 hertz. For test B, the notch was moved down to 7,200 hertz. Similarly, in test C, the notch was moved down still further to 6,300 hertz. To aid your hearing these differences, we will now sweep the notch from low to high, then stop at each point, and finally sweep it again. Listen for the apparent height of the noise to change. What is so significant about notching out parts of the signal spectrum we are listening to? Why does it give us cues as to the source location? This is rather a complex subject, but suffice it to say that it points out the very important role played by the outer ear, the pinna. Those folds of the outer ear reflect sound into the ear canal, and these reflections then combine with the sound entering the ear canal directly without reflection, creating constructive interference at certain frequencies and destructive interference at other frequencies. In other words, when the two signals are out of phase with each other, there is virtual cancellation, creating a deep notch like we have been simulating. Changing the angle or arrival of sound moves the frequency of the notch. So, let us never minimize the importance of those flaps on the sides of our heads. They may look funny on some people, but they are extremely important in our overall ability to locate sources of sound.